Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
There's more important things at play here, and the Palestinian people who are being murdered and dehomed and everything below murder are the loser in this.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
Go all the way to the final, to be honest.
Yeah,
I believe in my county, and I suppose they're good at football, they just have to believe in themselves.
I love playing 12, I love playing 10, I love being on the pitch, to be honest.
Are you confident?
Absolutely not.
No!
Thank you for all the supporters, thank you for the team, thank you France. Merci la France, merci les baguettes, merci les croissants. Je vous aime, I love you.
Okay, you're very welcome along to this special segment of Word on the Street. I'm Susanna and I'm here with Eve. And we're absolutely delighted to have Ben Lynch in studio with us. 23 years old, just back from the Winter Olympics, where you finished 8th in the halfpipe ski discipline, one of Ireland's best Winter Olympic performances to date. And you secured your place in the history books, becoming the first Irish skier ever to qualify for an Olympic final. Ben, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you, Susanna. That was a great introduction.
Boost your ego a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. I'm happy to be here, and it's been a crazy couple months here. Even the build up to the Olympics, I'm really happy to be here, and talking to you guys is a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming in. I mean, such an incredible result, and to make history books as well. I mean, it was all over the news here in Ireland. What has it been like for you? I mean, has it sunk in the past kind of week since that final, coming back to Ireland? What's the whole vibe been like?
Yeah, it's sunk in a little bit. I've been talking to my teammates a lot and my coach, and it's starting to really hit. The FIS rankings have been posted and everything. So it's a cool feeling. Yeah. Definitely still shocked a little bit by it. It's been my first ever finals at the Olympics, and to do that for the first time ever at the Olympics was amazing. It's been a hectic couple weeks.
Was there a big boost in your rankings? Is that kind of how it works out?
Yeah, I'll get a lot of points in FIS, and that'll help my ranking overall, which means I can just get more World Cup starts, and I'm leading up to World Champs next year. That's going to be very helpful.
Okay. I think people can tell from your accent probably immediately that you maybe didn't grow up in Ireland. You were born in Rathmines, though, moved over to Vancouver age 2 or 3. I've seen a lot of different ages. Some news outlets reporting 2, some 3.
2 years old.
Two years old.
At first, I didn't know because it's so long ago, but it's 2 years old, so very young. I have 3 older brothers. They went to school in Ireland, in Dublin, growing up, but I didn't. I moved very young. So ever since I can remember, I've been in Canada. But, it's cool coming back to Ireland since I was born there. I have lots of relatives here and feel like I have a connection here as well. So it's cool driving around the roads and thinking what could have been if I hadn't moved. It all came full circle. And I'm really happy about it.
Yeah, I mean, if you hadn't moved, it probably wouldn't have been as easy, maybe, your route into skiing and representing Ireland at the Olympics. But talk to us about kind of your journey to this point to representing Team Ireland.
Yeah, it's been a long journey. I didn't start out in halfpipe. I started out in slopestyle and big air. I started out skiing in the local mountains. Grouse Mountain was right next to my house in North Vancouver. Eventually moved on to the British Columbia team, so the provincial team. And from there, started competing. I really liked it. There was no halfpipe near my house, but I was quite good at slopestyle and big air, and eventually ended up making... I was on the provincial team, and then I was gunning for the Canadian team for slopestyle. It's very competitive. Wasn't able to make the cut. So I had 2 options. I could either quit or I could try out halfpipe.
Wow.
Halfpipe is very scary. It's very dangerous. So I originally avoided it, but thought I'd give it a go and ended up really liking it. So here I am. I was on the Canadian development team for 2 years, and then I switched over to the Irish team last year to give it a go. I think it was a great opportunity, potential for the Olympics, and ended up qualifying. And then I was able to put down my best ever run at the Olympics when it mattered most. So I was really, really happy about that.
Yeah.
And what age were you when you made the switch to the halfpipe?
I would have been 18 or 19 years old.
So it's not actually been that long that you've been doing this.
No, but I had all the tricks and the foundation in slopestyle and big air. It's just a lot harder to find halfpipes. It's very rare. It's kind of not a dying sport, but it's very expensive to maintain halfpipes. So there's only one proper halfpipe in all of Canada. and only a couple in the US. So yeah, it's a more harder to get into sport.
Would you have been considered a latecomer then, only starting in your late teens?
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, I already had the freestyle background, as I said. So I was in the community, but to start halfpipe, yeah, definitely late. But it took a lot of adjustment, taking my tricks from the slopestyle and big air into the halfpipe. There's a lot of adjustments there, but it went pretty well. I had a couple, you know, problems going into that, but yeah, it went really well.
And your switch from the Canadian development team over to the Irish team, I presume that was with primarily an Olympics in mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
How difficult was that? Because I can only presume that in a Canadian setup, even on a development side, there's a lot of facilities provided for you, maybe coaches, maybe funding. Then we've heard from talking to some of the Irish athletes that although, you know, there's a lot of support from Sport Ireland and from the kind of Team Ireland side of things, it's obviously harder because it is smaller. Mm-hmm. What was that? I mean, was it a big decision firstly? And kind of what was that? What did that switch look like practically?
Yeah, it was a big switch. I think the biggest switch for me was going from the Canadian team to the Irish team was the facilities that I get to use on the Canadian team. The funding, it's all right. A lot of people may think that, you know, if you're at Olympic status or you're competing on World Cups, you have proper funding. Mm. And that isn't necessarily the case, whether you're on the Canadian team or the Irish team. I actually had more money and funding on the Irish team than I did on the Canadian team.
Okay.
Yeah, so a lot of people think that you can be financially stable when you're an Olympian. That is not necessarily the case. It is really hard to get funding. One of the best ways you can do that is through, you know, content creation and getting sponsors on board. That's more of an easier way to do it. But yeah, it's not as lucrative as a lot of people may think it is.
Yeah. Kind of just touching on the content creation side, I wanted to ask what the vibe was like in the Olympic Village, because we see so many young athletes and they're doing all these TikToks and they're really kind of promoting themselves. And I think in the Summer Olympics, there was that swimmer who was eating the cupcakes. Did you see that last year? That was great.
No.
he was really funny. And then you have so many kind of exposed Gen Z athletes and they are self-promoting. Is there a pressure to do that?
I wouldn't say there's necessarily a pressure. I would say, though, that the Olympics is so big that if you post a piece of content on social media, it'll explode. Like, people love seeing the food in the Olympic Village or the gyms or, you know, the kit that we all get, like the outerwear we get. So I think a lot of people, if you're smart, try to take advantage of that. Like, I posted a couple reels and Instagram reels and TikToks, and they exploded. They were massive. So I think also, though, a lot of people get distracted by it.
Okay.
It becomes kind of a distraction for a lot of people. They want to post and want to go viral. But I think it's best to really just focus on the competition and doing your best. Yeah.
Did you enjoy the vibes in the Olympic Village as a whole? I know you're focused obviously on the competition, but were you able to enjoy that a little bit as well?
Yeah, it was cool. There's a lot of people there. Everyone kind of has a respect for each other because, you know, we all worked really hard to get there. And there's all this pin trading and everyone wants to chat. There's also an amazing spa, like the facilities they have there.
Oh, wow.
Amazing. The spa was so great.
I'm sold, yeah.
Yeah. I was there every day, you know. Sauna, cold plunge, and they had this really big infinity pool that looked over Lavinia Village.
Wow.
Which was amazing. So, yeah, it was a cool vibe. Everyone's hanging out and having fun.
I want to ask you about your dad. Obviously, he was a very successful rower here in Ireland. He won the Henley Regatta 3 times, and then your brother has followed in his footsteps, one of them anyway. I'm not sure about the others. Was there ever a pressure on you before you got into the skiing to follow the same kind of path?
I wouldn't necessarily say there was a pressure, but definitely like an opportunity. My dad always brought me down to the rowing club and tried to encourage me to get more into it. But I personally way preferred skiing. I have been asked this question a lot over the past couple of weeks, and it's hard to put my finger on why, but I think I was just more drawn to it. It was something that is more unique, and you can really express yourself through your skiing and through ski edits, and I really like that aspect of the sport. So I think that's why I went after skiing mainly, and being, you know, grown up in Vancouver and skiing on Grouse Mountain, I had a lot of opportunity there as well. So yeah, it worked out.
Was there an age where he realized this is a lost cause? I'm gonna leave him off to the skiing.
Yeah, I'm sure as soon as I made the provincial team, In Vancouver, he was probably like, well, this is a lost cause. But he always, you know, tries to encourage me to go rowing. It's a really good cardio sport, but just not for me.
Yeah. Speaking of your family, there was a video that went around, I think, after you qualified for the final. And there's a whole bunch of them at the bottom and they're super excited and they all just keep shouting, Big Ben! Big Ben! Yeah. Talk us through why they're calling you Big Ben. I mean, obviously you're big in stature, but is that the only reason?
Yeah, Big Ben. I think they were also trying to hint at me going big, like amplitude-wise.
Okay.
So that's a big criteria for halfpipe, is your amplitude. There's also difficulty and then overall impression. Those are what they judge the competition on. And so I think they were hinting at both my size and also the amplitude I had to get in that. But
okay.
Yeah, it's kind of speaking of the videos for that were coming from the Olympics, we were obviously watching it in the office here and so many people at home watching as well. And there's this incredible moment just before, I think it's your final run, and the camera kind of is zooming in on your face, and you have this smile on your face before your run. So many athletes we see, and it's this very kind of stony look just before they go because they're trying to get in the zone or whatever. But you looked like you were having just an incredible time. What was going through your head in that moment?
Yeah, I had kind of gone into it with the mentality that I was going to have as much fun as I possibly could. Because, you know, we're at the Olympics and I worked so hard to get here. I saw a lot of people in the snowboarding and other events have like huge breakdowns because they didn't land their run. And I don't necessarily think that's the move. I think we've all worked so hard, and especially after making finals, I was just happy to be there, you know, and having that mentality, I think helped a lot because there's already a win in your back pocket and you're just building off of it and using that momentum. So, yeah.
Did you have an expectation going into this Olympics of how well you could do?
Yeah, I honestly did not think I was going to make finals going to the Olympics. I was just going to go there and give it my best shot. So I tried to focus a lot on the inputs. That's what I talked a lot with my mental performance coach for the Irish team. He was very helpful. His name is Paul. And he said, just focus on training. Don't focus on the outcome. Focus on doing everything you can to train well. And that's exactly what I did.
Can you tell us a bit about the qualifying journey? Because we did a couple of interviews with some, I think they were alpine skiers and mogul skiers in the run-up who eventually didn't qualify, but that was like start of January, only a month away from the games, and they still didn't know if they were going to make it or not. Were you a similar story? Like, was it right at the end of January that you found out?
Yeah, it was tough. I kind of knew after the Aspen World Cup that I had qualified, and that was in early December.
Okay.
But it was very, you know, scary going into it because I was very low on the clean list, we call it. So
What's a clean list?
The clean list is the Olympic qualification list.
Okay.
So you have all the different nations that are qualified. And I was very low on that list. I was at one point, I think I was 23rd and only 24 get to go.
Oof.
So I was very low. And so it was scary going into it. Was like, am I going to qualify? Am I going to get that spot? And I did. And I was very happy that I was able to go and represent Ireland. It was cool. Yeah.
What was the kind of immediate lead up to the Olympics like? Because we asked you as you came in, you know, what's the last kind of week been like? And you're just kind of saying, well, the past 2 months have been such a whirlwind. What was that kind of immediate, once you know you've made the team, how did the preparation kind of explode from there?
Yeah, once I knew I made the team, it was really about working with Kiara. Kiara is my strength and conditioner. On rehabbing my knee, because I had this knee injury going into it. I hurt it in October, and it was a terrible time to hurt it. Oh my God. Because I had all these competitions coming up, and I can't miss them because I need to qualify.
Okay.
But my knee really just needed time to heal. And so it was a really big battle going into it, trying to balance the, you know, learning new tricks and trying new tricks and going big and getting the results I need with letting my knee heal. You know, because every time you land low in the half pipe or you have a crash, it comes out a little bit more sore. And that, you know, snowballs into a big knee injury. So, yeah, the preparation was getting my knee strong, getting the quad, hamstring and glutes like fired and strong so that I can take those impact.
You spoke about the final a second ago with Eve. But I must admit the my first kind of knowledge of you, and that's bad, but sorry, I'd read about you in the build-up to the Olympics, but the first time I watched you, I suppose, was in that second run, and it was one of those classics where I feel like whenever an Olympics is on, you just have the TV on in the background.
Yeah, constantly.
And you don't really know what you're watching, but you're entertained. And it happened to be the half pipe, and it went, Ben Lynch is up from Ireland. And I was like, oh, an Irish guy, cool. And then you did that run, and I remember watching, and as soon as you landed the last trick, you landed backwards and you went like this, hands on head, like mouth open in shock. And then it kind of panned to your coach, I presume he's your coach at the top of the run. He also had his hands up on his head, like, what the hell?
Yeah.
What was that reaction to? Was it just how well the run went?
So that reaction was to me doing the right dub 12 on my fourth hit. I had not trained that trick.
Oh my God. Okay.
I had not done that trick since October in New Zealand. So the fact that I landed that clean into the left cork 10 and full pull landed run was insane. And I was freaking out because I had a chance making the finals, and I did make the finals. So it was really, really cool. And I was shocked.
How far ahead of you starting that run did you think, okay, I'm going to do this trick?
I had planned to do it.
Okay,
so
okay.
Before I dropped in, I was going to do the trick, but I was trying my best not to think about it too much. Just land the first couple tricks and then go for it. But the plan was to go for it in the second run. I just had to land my first run clean.
Mm-hmm.
So usually we plan to do a trick that, or runs are, that we know we can land because, you know, my whole family's there. Everyone's watching. You want to have the best chances of landing your run. So I had put together a run that I knew I could land in two tries. Usually the first run, you get what's called the first run jitters and you're nervous and everything just kind of doesn't go to plan. But I ended up doing my first run pretty much perfectly. So that kind of gave me the green light to go for it in my second run, and I tried the right dub 12 and it ended up working out.
And why is that so difficult, or like why would that, did that provoke such a reaction, that specific trick?
I think just the fact that I did it at the Olympics
okay.
was why I got that reaction, because it's just such a big venue and there's so many people watching and I had so many messages, and to do that in front of all of them was like unbelievable. Yeah.
Did you tell your coach at the top, I'm going for it?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I told him. He was like, you're going for it. And I was like, yep, I'm going for it. So
he wasn't, there was no talking you out of it.
No, there was no talking me out of it.
It was
of course.
Good in the end.
But it is interesting though, because a lot of the time when you say, I'm going to go for this big trick on my fourth hit, you forget about what you have to do in the first three tricks. It's a build up, right? So I remember him telling me, don't think about it too much. You know how to do this trick. You've done it in training in October. Just do the first three tricks. And if you land those clean, then think about, okay, now we're going right dub 12. That's really the key.
There's not a whole lot of time to think about it between the third and the fourth.
No. Yeah. And that's another thing about half pipe is it's quick. You know, mm-hmm. There's not a lot of time to think. And so it has to really be instinctual. And we practice that a lot, is just visualization. So when I drop into the half pipe, I know exactly what I'm doing and I don't have to think a lot. It's just instinctual and you just go for it.
I wanted to ask you as well, speaking of that trick and kind of how dangerous it was, the day before I was watching the women's and I saw, I don't know, I'm sure you heard of it, but Cassie Sharp, one of the Canadians, she had a massive wipeout.
Yeah.
And I don't know a whole lot about half pipe, but it didn't look good.
Mm-hmm.
I think she then had a bit of a concussion, some facial injuries, and she did end up pulling out of the final, especially because I'm presuming you knew her from kind of the Canadian side of things. When another athlete has a big fall like that, how do you mentally kind of put that to the back of your mind and kind of not worry that the same thing is going to happen to you?
That is a really tough part of the sport, for sure. I saw her go down, and that was the night prior to I was going to be competing. So it's tough, but you try to just do everything you can to not think about that too much. Obviously, there's always risk in the half pipe, but do whatever you can. Try to breathe. Try to not think about the possible downfalls and just focus on, I'm going to land this run, and put your mental state in a confident position, if that makes sense. Yeah.
You mentioned earlier working with like a psychologist before the games. Like how long have you been working with a mental coach? Is that something that was very important for your preparation?
Yeah, definitely. It's really important working with a mental performance coach because it's easy to think about the future and the past, whereas you really need to be focused on the present, especially when competing. There's this long build up to it and there's all these nerves that come into it. So having some tactics is really, really important.
Is part of the risk you were talking about there what draws you to the sport as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think the adrenaline and the danger side of it is what makes fun, to be honest with you. It's scary. And not, I mean, if it was easy, everyone would be doing it, as my dad says. So, yeah, like, that's what makes it fun. That's what makes it entertaining to watch, too, is that mental battle as well as physical.
Do your parents get sometimes scared watching you? I can only imagine.
Yeah, my mom said she was terrified at the bottom. She said, this is the last one. You're not doing another competition. And I was like, well, I think I might do a couple more. But yeah, my parents apparently, you know, get really scared when I do that type of stuff. I mean, to be fair, from a viewing perspective, it is quite scary to watch. You know, you're at the bottom and you can't really tell if they're going to land, you know, in the half pipe or on the flats or in the bottom. So it's a scary one to watch for sure.
But very impressive. I was in awe of the sport, to be honest, and all the athletes doing it. I'm curious, speaking of like Cassie and fellow Canadians, obviously in that final, there were three, in the final you were in, sorry, there were three other Canadians. Sorry, you're Irish, mm-hmm. obviously, but three Canadians representing Team Canada. Mm-hmm. Brendan McKay got the bronze, which I think bumped you into eighth, which must have been annoying at the time. but Andrew Longino, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, only finished one place ahead of you. And then you actually managed a higher score than Dylan Marineau, who finished 11th. Mm-hmm. Not to be cheeky, but did that feel good? The fact that maybe you wouldn't have made a Canadian Olympic team whilst you were with the development side, but here you were proving to them that you deserve to be amongst the best athletes in the world.
Yeah, I would say more than that, it just felt good to land my run, like from a personal perspective. I think halfpipe skiing and freestyle in general is a very respectful sport. We don't have a lot of competition. I think if Dylan Marineau, the guy who got behind me, if he had landed his run, he would have been way ahead of me and his score would have been way higher.
Okay.
So I'm not going to say anything about, you know, it felt good to beat him. Obviously, maybe a little bit. It's cool to see that, but more from just a personal perspective, I was proud of myself to put my run down and come out with a win for Ireland.
And what does it feel like, just even Canadian part aside, to be in the top 10 of the athletes in the world?
It feels amazing. It's been a dream since a kid to be in the top 10 and to be in the finals. You know, I used to watch X Games a lot. I used to watch those like night events because the finals is always at night. Yeah. So the lights are out, you know, everyone's watching because it's such a bright event. All the lights are on the half pipe and there's all this attention. So growing up, it was a dream for me to be in one of those competitions. I had yet to qualify for one. It's very difficult. So to do that at the Olympics was insane.
And when you finish in the top 10 at the Olympics, like, or even make an Olympic final, do you get, I don't know, a certificate? Do you get anything to memorialize that from the Olympics themselves?
Yeah, so
a certificate.
Apparently.
I don't know.
Yeah, so this is really cool, actually. I am going to be receiving a diploma
from
the Irish government or the Irish team, or I don't know, but a diploma, because if you get top 8 in the Olympics, you get a diploma of excellence. So I'm going to be receiving that. I just made the cut with 8th place. So.
That's amazing.
Where are you going to display your diploma of excellence?
Probably in my room on the wall. Unless my dad steals it, he has like a big case so with all my medals and everything, so he might put it in there. But
yeah. Speaking of medals, I know you probably didn't have one in your hand at the Olympics, but there was a lot of rumors coming out of it that they broke all the time.
Yeah.
Was that actually a thing?
I heard that was a thing. There was, I think it just wasn't tied on very well. Like the way they built it just wasn't very well done, so... But obviously, I didn't get a medal, so I can't attest to that.
Next time.
Maybe next time.
I'm sure it still felt amazing to hold one of the medals, even if the little ribbon part didn't quite catch on.
Actually, just speaking of next time, I guess, I wanted to ask, what's this kind of age range for a half-pipe athlete? Like, in theory, how many more Olympics could you have?
That's a good question. So, in half-pipe skiing, it's kind of... split. So there's a lot of guys who are older in their 30s, early 30s, who are still dominating the sport, like the guy who won gold, Alex Ferreira. He's, I think, 31 or 32 years old.
Okay.
But then you also get the younger guys, and they're fearless.
Yeah.
So you have Finn and Luke from New Zealand, I think 18, 19 years old, who are really, really good competitors, but they are, I guess, less consistent in some instances. So it's very split. I'd say I'm in the middle, 23. And there's no reason I can't keep going until 27. For me, it's mainly the financials, if I can actually support myself financially to do that.
I was going to ask, does a top eight finish, because you said at the beginning that sponsorship is huge for athletes like yourself, will this help you in terms of gaining more sponsors?
I think, yeah, very, very helpful. Getting that result, I'm hoping, will be a good leverage point for me to land some sponsors, I'm really hoping, and maybe some more funding, who knows. I'm going to try to leverage that and see what I can get done.
Do you have to go out and like look for that, or do you hope kind of sponsors will come to you?
Yeah, mainly I have to go out and look for it and kind of sell myself. But I think I got a lot of good connections from going to the Olympics and beating people on the Irish team who can hear what they've said, have some companies I could get in reach with.
And yeah. Amazing. What are the kind of tournaments now that are upcoming for you? Because I know you mentioned earlier on about the World Championships, are they next year? Mm-hmm. So what does the next few months and year look like for you?
Yeah, so the World Championships are in March next year. So plan for me is I'm going to go back to Calgary, where the half pipe is. I'm going to train there a couple months. There's a really good half pipe in Calgary, so I'll do that. And then I think I'll do a couple more training camps. There's a couple in Austria, and I'll probably traveling around early next season and build up to World Champs. Yeah.
What would, I think just lastly, unless you have any more, Eve, but I suppose what would your biggest goal be then? Now, because I presume one of the biggest ones before this was to make an Olympics, and then you exceeded your goals, getting into a final, finishing eighth. So what are your goals now for the next year, next 4 years even?
Yeah, I'd say a big goal of mine would be even better than that. Top five would be the next goal. But then also trick-wise, I'd love to try do the left dub 12. So the right dub 12 I did in my run, but to do that the other way would be pretty cool. And I think that would be able to up my score a lot. So yeah, and just ski as best as I can and try to remain healthy is the big goal. Injury free, it's obviously a huge part of our sport is to get injured. So try to keep that out of my deck of cards.
Is the left dub harder than the right dub, sorry?
For me, it is, surprisingly, even though I spin left naturally. So, but yeah, I'd like to try the other way and try to work on that a little bit and try to figure that out would be huge.
Okay, amazing. Well, best of luck with everything coming up over the next few months and years.
Thank
and
you.
Thank you so much for coming in and chatting to us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I think they'll go all the way to the final, to be honest.
Yeah?
Yeah. I believe in my county, and I suppose they're good at football. They just have to believe in themselves.
I love playing 12. I love playing 10. I love being on the pitch, to be honest.
Are you confident?
Absolutely not.
No!
Thank you for all the supporters. Thank you for the team. Thank you, France. Merci la France. Merci les baguettes. Merci les croissants. Je vous aime. I love you.